Greetings, accent fetishists. I'm Tom Bartolet, and today I am your solo host for the CWF Gamecast. Unfortunately, Jonathan's been a little under the weather. I've been following his various decline into, flu-like zombieism on Facebook. And I thought, wouldn't this be a great opportunity for me to do a solo CWF Gamecast? So I think we might call this the Tom Bartolet Takeover Show. So I have a new contest to raise. I have a few books to review. I wanted to do a little segment called My Favourite Games Workshop Miniatures, which, I don't know, just kind of caught me before I started recording, and I thought, well, I've got to find another segment to fill the show, so I might as well talk about that. And also a little bit more about the Field of Chaos role-playing game, and my general musings about things gaming, and perhaps a little bit of discussion associated with the folks who I'd like to get on the show. But starting off this show, as we normally do, I'd like to talk about my week in wargaming. And this week has mainly been about working on simulation-style wargames, and also really reading through a lot of books, because I think books really are my inspiration with regards to certainly writing computer simulations, but also now exploring wargaming rules. And I've been debating recently whether I should use D12 rather than D6 in my Field of Chaos role-playing game, primarily because D12s have slightly more diverse mathematical abilities than D6s. And what interested me in particular was the most recent issue of White Dwarf. What's the fellow's name? Anyway, the most recent issue of White Dwarf Standard Bearer featured a bit of an insight into actually the gaming's... featured a bit of an insight into the statistical gaming elements associated with being a White Dwarf, or a Games Workshop game designer, more importantly. And I thought that was particularly fascinating, because you very rarely... what's the metaphor? See through the mirror associated with these folk and their general lives of creating and designing games. And to a certain extent, although I do this in almost complete isolation, that is also some of my musing associated with developing this Field of Chaos wargame. And I had talked a little bit with Jonathan about the idea of releasing it open source, as in releasing source code in parallel to the rulebook. And that may seem quite striking. I have received a bit of correspondence associated with why I'm actually charging money associated with the Field of Chaos book, for a start, because it is a book. And that is, it's mainly to do with the way books are treated. I've released a number of free books in the past. I've written for a number of books that have had money charged for them and these kind of things. And what I've done with Field of Chaos, the initial release, the actual book as opposed to the role-playing game, is release it at such a low price point that really no one has any excuse not to pay the money. The electronic version is, I think, $3.99 at the time of recording, and the paperback version is under $10. I think it might be $9.49, perhaps, something around there. So my view with regards to the role-playing game as well is that it will also be a similar price point. I'd like aesthetically for it to be quite similar to the actual Field of Chaos book. But I also like the larger format standard role-playing game rules. As I've editorialized in recent podcasts, I'm a big fan of the Robotech role-playing game and have purchased the more recent versions of the Robotech role-playing game. I think I have the three, the Macross, Southern Cross, and Masters, perhaps, of the manga-style books. And although I understand the... They want to say it is... almost in honour of the manga style of books, but it really just doesn't feel like a role-playing game book to me. So I think I will probably release the Field of Chaos role-playing game in a traditional, whatever, 11x8.5 standard US paper-sized book format. Also, obviously, in an electronic book format, which will, as with the Field of Chaos book itself, probably be half the price. But the interesting thing about doing this in software in parallel is that a lot of the stuff that folks have to do through playtesting, I can actually do through software. And in terms of rules ambiguity, the software is very unambiguous. So it is an interesting situation, and really, I guess I'm looking for feedback as well from CWF Gamecast listeners, because I guess my natural assumption is that within any given role-playing game group, there should be at least one person that has the ability to read very basic code, or at least code logic. And maybe that's a bad assumption. I don't know. I just assume the proliferation of computer nerd-related folk is pretty good. And I guess maybe that is my own naivete. So if you're listening in and you roleplay with a group of folk and none of them know anything about programming computers or anything about computer logic or anything like that, then please email me, because I'd certainly be very interested to know if this was in fact a naive assumption on my part. But what it will mean is that rather than the usual ambiguity, and I've almost thought about like publishing the software in parallel, like in a book format too, or maybe amalgamating some of the rules with some of the software, it could look very curious. And as you read Field of Cast the book, you'll find that there's a lot of kind of computer references and things like that as well. So, yeah, I mean, my plan is just to throw it up on SourceForge, maintain it, and maintain the rule set at the same time. But I think it's going to be a new paradigm in terms of these role-playing game genres to actually have a software version of the role-playing game as well. And also, because it's open source, it lends itself to folks who want to skin it or amalgamate it into, for example, OpenSim, which is the Second Life client, the Second Life server. So you could imaginably kind of enter a Field of Chaos game through Second Life, or alternatively, it could be modded for a wide variety of other games. So there's all this potential of writing in the software in parallel, but I just could be nuts. So anyway, that has been a good portion of this week, just a lot of reading, a lot of reflecting, and a lot of thinking about how these dynamics actually work together in both role-playing game sense and software sense. So that's really been my week in wargaming. I'm trying to think of anything else. I did buy a couple of books this week. The most interesting one is Panzer Tactics, German Small Unit Armor Tactics in World War II. And this is actually, I gave a review probably just in the new year associated with the combat history of German Tiger Tank Battalion 503 in World War II. These are both Stockpole books, and I really have to give a shout out to Stockpole books because they are making some amazing books at a relatively reasonable price. This one that I bought recently was $29.95, and this other one was the same price. So they're releasing, 300 odd pages? 350 odd page books at a very reasonable price and vast amounts of detail. And I think they're actually seriously undercutting Osprey in terms of the quality of information, the quality of pictorial information, and also just the volume of information. And I think in terms of my money, I would much rather put my money into Stockpole books than I would into Osprey currently. And as folks know, I am probably one of the largest Osprey fanboys you could find. But I really do like what Stockpole is doing. My hope is that they will expand outside of German armour, as my two examples only relate to German armour. But the thing that struck me in particular, I'll tell a little story here, which I don't think I've told in the CWF Gamecast. My grandfather, on my father's side, fought in the 8th Army. He was a desert rat. And he, very early on in the war, came across a panzer that had been hit. And within the panzer was a camera, a film camera. And he took photos for the remainder of the war with that film camera. And my uncle in Australia actually has all the photos from that. My anticipation, although I don't know, is that there may have been some prior photos of the German as well. So what you have here is a photographic record throughout the war. So I feel, although obviously the panzers were very much fighting my grandfather, particularly, Rommel et al., I do have some kind of strange connection to German armour through that story. But I also like the aesthetic of it. And as a small boy, I don't think necessarily exclusively, but most of the plastic tanks that I assembled were panzers. I think I did a Cromwell and maybe even a Churchill. But the things that interested me typically related to German armour. And I think the level of detail and the aesthetic is something that stuck with me from a very young age. I remember in particular assembling, I think it was probably a Africa Corps Panzer III from memory. And that was something that, I remember greatly. And then I assembled a Panzer IV, And yeah, basically I was hooked on Sherman Armour from a relatively early age. So anyway, that's been my reading this week, and yeah, certainly heavy impact. And I would thoroughly recommend if you can find, let me read them again, Stackpole Books. They are, which you can find at stackpolebooks.com. If I'd been hip to the game, I would have probably looked up what else they had available other than German armor related books. But I think by purchasing the Combat History of the German Tiger Tank Battalion 503 in World War II, I probably got the order of the Panzer Tactics in at my local Borders as well. It's funny how that happens. Unfortunately, they didn't get my whole idea with regards to Osprey books, but that's on the side. So, yeah, that's been my week in wargaming. You may realise as you listen into these podcasts that I don't have an active wargaming group. In fact, truth be told, probably by observing these podcasts, one may assume that I'm rather antisocial in my general musings. And honestly, I think a large portion of my time is actually spent doing things like this, podcasting, writing software, writing text, these kind of things. And when we moved to Las Vegas, yeah, there was a kind of local gaming scene here, but not really groups that I've interacted with since, although, like I've mentioned, I have co-workers that are pretty active in the local gaming scene. But I don't know what would change. I'd like to have a local gaming store. The closest gaming store is about 40 minutes away, and yeah, I don't know. Just after a long day, it doesn't really seem like the kind of thing that I want to be doing. Versus, for example, talking to a microphone. But anyway, so that's been my week in wargaming. Lots of esoteric stuff and, yeah, some Field of Chaos-related stuff and just working out, basically, this whole role-playing game thing, which my hope is will be available in a kind of September-October timeframe. But there are a few additional things that need to come together before that happens. So that's my week in wargaming. So as I was thinking of topics for this solo show, I also recently received a bonus at work. And my thinking with regards to the bonus at work was that I was going to use a small portion of it to purchase the new Orcs and Goblins book available through Games Workshop. I did have an opportunity to thumb through it when I was in the Bay Area, and I liked a lot of it. And I liked also the kind of movement towards coffee table books, because basically, quite frankly, I don't do a lot of wargaming, and yeah, the more coffee table books, the merrier. But while I was thinking about that, I've had a standing order on Games Workshop's site for a number of months now for a particular set of miniatures that really, if anything, reinvigorated my interest in Games Workshop. It was the set of miniatures. But I'll tell a little story associated with my history with Games Workshop-related stuff. And folks who listen in may get the sense that I guess my pre-history was one of a Games Workshop fanboy. I'm not sure if I've told the story on this podcast in particular, but the cost associated with getting miniatures in Australia was fundamentally prohibitive in my early youth. And when I was in Australia, I had a small squat army, and I kind of experimented with a small Imperial Guard army, and I had maybe a dozen or so Chaos Space Marines that were part of a large order that I got when I was about 12. But aside from really the squats, which were my only kind of functioning, probably, I don't know, maybe 1,200 point 40k army, I really didn't have enough money to do anything else. I didn't have enough money to collect any other Games Workshop armies. So when I arrived in the UK, actually I probably should take a few steps back. So probably through my early teens into my mid-teens, Games Workshop was pretty well all the rage with my friends. I had one friend whose family was from the UK, and I think his aunts and uncles would send him various box sets of plastic orcs and various other things. And I never really liked the aesthetic of the plastics. He also had a Space Marine army that he painted up, again from the original plastic box set of Space Marines. But there was a local wargaming group, and I can't really think of its name, but as I've described previously, probably where I'm from, Canberra, Australia, was also home of CanCon, which I think is the oldest and the longest running wargaming convention in Australia. There have been various other conventions quite aggressively used to supersede CanCon. There's one called DogCon, which is on at exactly the same time. I think it's more a tournament event in Sydney, and sadly, the kind of rivalry between these two things were probably in large part due to maybe some of the fracturing problems of Cam. Kind of, it was over a period that I don't know about in Australian wargaming history. So, if folks are listening and actually understand that period, I mean, please feel free to actually add commentary here. But anyway, my early experiences with wargaming related to the Canberra Game Society, that was its name. And we would go to a local library and also a local community centre. They were off each week. One was in a place called Woden, and the next place was a place called Civic. And Canberra basically is like the UK in terms of weather. It's kind of damp and cold and cloudy for about 8 months of the year, which really lends itself to wargaming, I think, in general. And I would go to these various locations. Typically, I seem to recall more the Woden location, mainly because I think at the time there was a game store in Woden. It wasn't until later that there was a game store in Civic. Now, there's actually a really splendid game store in Civic, so I don't know if we have any Canberra Australian listeners. But yeah, to go back there and see the kind of palatial two-story game store that's in the centre of Civic makes me realise that at least there'll be another couple of generations of game store-related folk that will grow up in that area. Anyway, so I guess I was probably 14, 15. My parents had been divorced for a couple of years. I really, aside from the squat group, and I can't remember, I must have paid about $200 for the squats at the time. I remember I'd mowed an awful lot of lawns in order to get this relatively impressive squat army with trikes and various other things. No match to really any group of Tyranids or Orcs or even Chaos Space Marines, but still it was a functioning army that could lose in a variety of different ways. The main thing that struck me, however, was that it was, and it's ironic now I'm in my mid-30s, but it was frequented by an unsavoury group of men that didn't bathe and were very aggressive and just generally kind of boneheaded. I mean, I think probably represented in any given game store in any given part of the world, but at the time I just felt that this was a really strange group of people. And I guess that moved me away from spending time there. I mean, there was probably, I don't know, there were at least five games going at any given time, and depending on what my friend wanted to play, I would either go there and watch him play Fantasy or watch him play 40K. And the main thing that I enjoyed was actually going to Kentucky Fried Chicken and eating one of their chicken breast burgers and getting a pack of their fries. And this, hard to imagine, but fast food in Australia was a relatively unique thing. It's only where I came from. It wasn't until I left Australia that our family actually even discovered the chicken breast. I was the first to bring the chicken breast into the house, and my mother was thinking that it was something to be fed to a cat or something like that. We had a relatively interesting dietary life in Australia, but I digress. So, yeah, that was my experience with wargaming in my mid-teens, and the cost and also the folks that were associated with it really alienated me, I guess, from that group. And towards the end of my teens, a friend of mine got a job working for Ronin Films. He was actually the publicist on the film Shine. And this was actually the fellow, 5-odd years previously, who had the Fantasy Orc Army and the Space Marine Army. And so once he had done that amazing feat of publicising an Academy Award-winning film, which seemed rather surreal to, well, everyone who knew him, basically, he then decided that the, you know, once you'd gone from that great success, the next thing to do was to work for Games Workshop. Because basically, I guess that's what he'd always wanted to do. So he worked for Games Workshop, I think initially in Canberra, and was very quickly moved up to Sydney. And that whole period was kind of curious because there were a group of, I don't know what the word we call the term, kind of flunkies that would hang out at Games Workshop, including some strange, you know, some strange group of people and, yeah, anyway. So I would go there occasionally. In fact, I would go there on a Friday night typically because I knew I could find him there. I was at university at the time. It was probably my first or second year at university. So I would go up to the Games Workshop on a Friday night because I knew he was going to be there. He was remarkably unreliable, which was what was even more extraordinary about the whole Ronin Films Shine publicity thing. So I knew I could find him there and I knew we could go out afterwards. And at the time, he was living in some strange kind of multi-story group house that probably 10 other people lived in. It was kind of a strange environment. But anyway, so we would hang out at the Games Workshop, and then I would either... In fact, I would always get a bus back to where I was living on campus at the time. I don't think I ever stayed overnight, just because the digs were pretty strange. And over that period, I purchased a blister pack of Valhalla Imperial Guard. And that was the first miniature purchase that I had made since the early ones that I had owned. And that Valhalla Imperial Guard is really the only miniatures that I have remaining. I have a couple of the old Chaos Marines, but they were the only miniatures that I maintained from the period. Unfortunately, I gave away the squads, which, now looking back, just seems stupid. A moral to anyone listening into this under the age of 18, never give anything away because you'll just regret it. Anyway, so fast forward maybe 6-7 years, I was then living in the UK, and really I didn't want to have anything to do with Games Workshop initially. Probably the first year I was in the UK, I would walk past Games Workshop, so I would see White Dwarf in the newsstand, and I just thought, this is something of my past, this is associated with a former friend, it was all too costly, it was all too strange, what have you. And then after about a year of living in the UK, ironically, when I first moved to the UK, I literally lived probably 3 doors down from a Games Workshop. And it was a period of time where I was living in not particularly salubrious digs in the centre of Leicester. And it would have actually been quite nice to purchase and paint an army over that period of time. So it seems rather strange that my kind of hatred or disdain for Games Workshop... Oh, and I guess also it relates to my friend as well. I mean, my friend didn't have particularly good experiences working for Games Workshop. So... sometime then in Wilmslow, a year after I arrived in the UK, I decided to buy a White Dwarf and have a thumb through it. And what immediately came back to me was a wide variety of emotions associated with these little figures that I hadn't had since my mid-teens. And really, I had immunised myself from these experiences, but I just felt kind of dirty and awkward about the whole wargaming thing. And this really was a revelation to me that it was actually perfectly acceptable. In fact, I put this out there. My suspicion is that White Dwarf is really honestly written for adults. And my wife and I have had this discussion on a regular basis, particularly as I continue to maintain my subscription. But I honestly think that a majority of the folks that actively and cognitively do business with Games Workshop through a wide variety of means are adults. Now, there's always a group of children that, you know, are buying small armies and these kind of things, but I do honestly think that this is a hobby for adults. Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it anyway. So, my first experience kind of rediscovering Games Workshop was through this White Dwarf. And, I don't know, I've always had... There are two ends of the kind of Games Workshop spectrum with a kind of peppering in between that I've had some interest in. And they are really, honestly, I guess, dating back to my misspent youth. I'm trying to think if my friend had an Imperial Guard army as well. I don't think he did. But anyway, the first set of figures that really captivated me, when I said captivated me, of my pile of lead, of which all is thankfully painted, I have probably 100 Steel Legion Imperial Guard. So the figures that really captivated me initially in terms of just buying box sets and painting them were Steel Legion. And because I hadn't actually bought the Armageddon rule set, I mean, this is the really curious thing, I purchased probably about 6 box sets worth and began painting them prior to actually realising that rather than having the standard kind of 20 Imperial Guardsmen at the time, one only needed 10 of the Imperial Guardsmen, plus one of these curious-looking plasticky tanks that I didn't particularly like. And that always kind of struck me as curious. I do have, I don't know, maybe 1 or 2. I don't even think I do, actually. Anyway, I don't have any of the Kermara, or however you choose to pronounce it, because, yeah, it just looked a bit too bizarro. I do have, they're called centipedes or something? I do have the open ones that Forge World made. I have, I think, maybe 2 of those in my collection. No, I probably do have a camera. I don't know. Anyway, somewhere in the lead pile, there are some vehicles. Although I have none of the tanks. I mean, I think this is the thing that with the Imperial Guard that always interests me. The thing that I've always liked is infantry. Lots and lots of infantry, which is, I guess, also my interest in orcs. So they're the two extremes, basically, in my figure rotation. I have a wide variety of, I don't know, 80s, early 90s, but mainly 80s space orcs, typically in metal. And also the Steel Legion in stark contrast. And the main thing with the Steel Legion is I have probably, I don't know, 80% of my Steel Legion are painted exactly the same way. And this is a really curious thing, because I just have, you know, I don't know, White Dwarf figure case after White Dwarf figure case of these Steel Legion. And I've tried to think about what actually I like about the Steel Legion aesthetic. I think the first is that there's an interesting combination of aspects of the First World War and the Second World War, plus an old kind of futurism. And they're one of the only Imperial Guard units that are not necessarily proportional, but at least you get the sense that they really are humans. I mean, the Valhalla range, they're just kind of curious. The Kachikans, they're just kind of curious. The Cadians, well, the Cadians are kind of that way, but the Cadians are very much like the early Imperial Guard that I purchased when I was in LA in 1990. And I bought maybe two boxes, I think, two blisters of the Imperial Guard then. And they had the kind of funny plasticky arms, never quite stuck on right, probably needed extra green stuff or milliput. And, yeah, didn't really get into those heavily. I think my friend had some, maybe in support roles or something like that. But anyway, the Steel Legion struck me as, firstly, because they fight orcs. I mean, this is blatantly obvious because the guy's, like, holding an orc head in his hand. And you get a sense that, you know, these are natural adversaries to the other range of Games Workshop figures that interested me. I do have a kind of collected group of Chaos Space Marines in my collection, and a relatively small smattering of regular Space Marines. In addition to this, what else do I have in my 40k lineup? I have a few Eldar. I don't really have anything else. I'm not really interested in anything else. I think I threw in a few squads as homage. But aside from that, it's pretty well just a vast quantity of the Steel Legion Imperial Guard in all their guises. And I have a small smattering of other Imperial Guard. But aesthetically, I really just like the lines of the Steel Legion. And also it reminds me very much of certain aspects of the War Memorial, which I may or may not have talked about in this particular podcast, but as a small child, I would go to the War Memorial in Canberra, which was and still is effectively a museum. It's sort of like a war museum, like the Imperial War Museum in the UK, for example. And I spent a large portion of my childhood wandering around those halls. It's the only thing that disappoints me now is it's kind of been, I mean, it used to just be like vast amounts of armour and infantry, like, full-sized mannequins with, you know, whatever they were wearing with the weapons in hand. There was a thick smell of gun oil and kind of old military uniforms and these kind of things. And unfortunately, a lot of that's been sterilized. They pulled out a lot of that stuff. They've got, like, strange computer animation. The Holocaust is literally like a cue card now in terms of the description. And the Vietnam section that used to have a vast amount of information on VC, as well as Australian and some US stuff, now has a substantial war devoted to the anti-war movement. Which it previously had been just like literally a little black and white television that had been off in a corner. And my understanding is just before I left Australia in 1999, some consultants from a certain part of the world had come over and basically recommended that the War Memorial was far too complicated for most people to understand and they needed to simplify everything. And thankfully I was out for a majority of that. I went back last year, maybe 2 years ago now, and was really, really, really upset by how they'd... The only section that they hadn't simplified was the First World War section. But my feeling is probably they'll get to that. And I felt like writing a letter at the time, but just didn't. Because ultimately my memories and my experiences have probably been replaced by, you know, plenty of 10-year-olds who have run through the halls and now, you know, fascinated by the computer animations and all this other kind of stuff. I just think those kind of museums need to be like wall-to-wall stuff. And if you don't get a sense of what, you know, a German Second World War, you know, member of the SS looks like if you can't see the leather and the glint and also just the physical size as a small child, you really just don't get a sense of what this whole thing's about. So returning to the Steel Legion, I like the Steel Legion in terms of the kind of combination of aesthetics, and I think a large portion of the Imperial Guard have done that. My feeling is the Valhalla are just too heavy-handed, and I think it's the kind of combination of elements that I like with the Steel Legion. And yes, I would never play them in terms of the tanks and all that kind of nonsense. The rules associated with them specifically in Armageddon, I was very disappointed with, and I don't think actually lends itself really to Imperial Guard. Another sad Imperial Guard story is that I did buy, just before I left the UK, an Imperial Guard army, which I may or may not have told Jonathan about. I think I have, actually. I think I'm just rehashing old material. But a good portion of that was the Steel Legion. And truth be told, I do have a lot of other Imperial Guard, and I have Ogre and various other things. And a large portion of this is actually due to the fact that I developed quite a close relationship with a fellow called Fred Reed. Justin Fred Reed. Fred is his moniker. And Fred Reed features in a number of the Imperial Guard collector's guides and these kind of things. And he was just, he was very good at painting orcs and Imperial Guard. And I think that's probably the reasons that I gravitated these two figure types. And Fred and I met briefly at Games Day 2004. He then moved to the US, I think just after I did. But basically for a 3-year period, I was kicking him a good portion of my spare change, basically, to paint these eclectic Games Workshop figures from the late 80s on. And I think he has a certain dry humour, which I liked in terms of his figure painting prowess, too. He did get a lot of work following, actually. The last thing that I commissioned from him was an Ogre army when I first moved to the US. And, my initial move to the US wasn't as I don't know what one would call it. Basically, I just didn't have as much income as I had when in the UK when I moved here. So the figure painting, unfortunately, had to drop off. But yeah, I'm interested in actually doing figure painting reviews and a more detailed inspection, because I think it's one of those things where if you're good at painting, then you'll probably paint your own figures. But if you're just coming into this, and I have a Twitch in my hand and various other artifacts associated, so I can, with the Steel Legion, I had done most of the underpainting, and similarly, I have a group of First World War, both German and British, that I've done most of the underpainting for. But the detailed stuff and these kind of things, unfortunately, my hands just aren't good for. But anyway, so that is a roundabout tale of some of my favourite Games Workshop figures. And I think, yeah, the Steel Legion, I have a strange relationship. So with this bonus, I'm going to purchase an unpainted set of Steel Legion, very similar to the original box set. I don't think they'll ship it to me in the box set, but I wanted to buy that just before it gets pulled off this site, because my anticipation is probably it'll be pulled off this site. In fact, as I'm recording this, I only know of maybe 3 months ago, which was the last time I checked that it was on the site, so they may have already pulled it off the site. And I also have a strange relationship with a few of the Chaos Sorcerer figures, because they are still in print from the late 80s. So I'll probably buy a couple of those as well while I'm on the site. Just again to pay homage to figures that I once owned, figures that I've repurchased, and figures that I've had professionally painted. Anyway. So this is the section of the show associated with the ongoing contests. And the contest associated with Young Folk Sweat Equity is ongoing. Jonathan has been collecting some early correspondence associated with that. Because the audio from the last show hasn't actually gone out yet, I'm recording this prior to the audio going out, obviously, with Jonathan being unwell. He does the final editing and scrubbing together. Unfortunately, the shout-out and anticipation of the What Would Pan Do podcast potentially getting involved in this hasn't yet come out. So all my veritable trash talking, unfortunately, hasn't yet hit the airwaves. But yes, that is an ongoing contest. And with the show that is yet to come out, the last show that's still being edited, there was a little section of the show that related to the political compass, and that's kind of an in-joke between Jonathan and me. I don't want to dig up too much associated with those particularly curious wounds. Except to say that I'm actually really quite interested, and I'm actually really quite passionate about the information that the political compass produces. Unlike Jonathan, I don't just think it's a beer and pretzel style game, and I wanted to put out there a contest of my own associated with four copies of my book Field of Chaos. This would be physical copies, because I prefer the physical copies, and they're more expensive than the electronic copies, and you can throw them at people and leave them in bus stops and do a wide variety of other things, which I guess you could do with a PDF as well. But anyway, these are for physical copies of Field of Cars, four of them. Yes, four copies. Okay. So, the way that you can win yourself a copy of Field of Chaos is very simple. First, if you're on Facebook, find the Political Compass. If you're not on Facebook, you can also find the Political Compass online. Take their amusing little survey that amounts to nothing, according to Jonathan. Personally, I think it actually gives a very deep and introspective view of people's political psychologies, but I'll just put that aside. And when you have completed the Political Compass, work out which particular quadrant you're in. Are you right authoritarian, right libertarian, left authoritarian, or left libertarian? That's the only information you need to provide me. I don't need to know any of your coordinates or, you know, if you're an extreme communist or anything like that. You just provide me that information. Email it to me directly, because Jonathan's handled the other contests, but this is one that I want to handle. Easiest email address to reach me at is tom, T-O-M, at nobleape, nobleape.com. That email address again, tom, T-O-M, at nobleape.com. And email me which quadrant you're in. Again, the options: right authoritarian, right libertarian, left libertarian. And from each of those quadrants, I will select one entry at random, and they will win a copy of Field of Chaos. Now, because my anticipation is this is going to be kind of ongoing thing, and it's to do with Jonathan getting better, and I'm just recording this audio, and who knows how it's all going to turn out. Anyway, let's give you a certain amount of time in order to actually answer this particular contest. So, let's say May, okay? The first show in May, I will announce the winners of this contest. So, you've got a couple of months to do the you know, political compass, work out where you are, and email me. And that's it. I'm not going to share any of this information, although... I'm not going to share any information. I might share the tally, though. I think the tally might be interesting to just get a general perspective of how many of our listeners are extremely communist and others. I may actually share the tally, but only because if you are a curious political persuasion, then you probably are more likely actually to win in some kind of curious way. But I'm interested in the kind of general surveying of the listeners of the show, which may mean that I will tone down some of my rhetoric, and maybe Jonathan will tone down some of his rhetoric. So I don't know whether the tallies will actually affect the show in any way. But I thought this was just an amusing little way to give away four copies of Field of Chaos to listeners, and also, yeah, just another contest, and probably an easier contest than the ones that we've had to date, because all you need to do is take a quiz and email me, and that's all that's required. So anyway, that's the contest for the show, the new contest for the show, and we need to think of a name for the contest. I don't know what I'll call it. Anyway, so let's call it the Field of Chaos Political Compass Contest, and we'll take it from there. So that contest, again, go to the Political Compass, either on Facebook or Google it, answer the questions, work out whether you're right authoritarian, left authoritarian, right libertarian, left libertarian, and email me which of those you are, and then you will be in a prize pool associated with your like-minded political folk to win a copy of Field of Chaos, the paperback. I will send it internationally. I'm already sending copies internationally, so yeah, it'll just go in one of the piles that I send out, and management will be none the wiser, because of course you all look like editors of magazines and these kind of things, so very good, very good. Anyway, so that's another contest that I will be running, and please contact me, and I'll get you on the list, so to speak. And we'll take that first show in May. And what I might say is it'll be the first recorded show in May rather than the first released show in May, because there's a week difference that gives Jonathan time to edit them. So it may actually be the second show in May, with the view that the first show that comes out in May was actually... Anyway, so you get the picture. But anyway, that's going to be the contest. In addition to this, there are a number of folk that I'd actually like to interview and get into this CWF Gamecast, And two of the people, and I'm not really sure what the standard is currently with Henry Hyde, because Henry Hyde is actually providing us with things to pass on in contests. He's giving us winnings for the contest for Battle Games Magazine, and Battle Games Magazine is now represented on the site. And I'd like to get Henry Hyde on, because Henry is someone who basically has the pulse of UK gaming. And I don't want to take anything away from Neil Shook and The View from the Veranda, which is the podcast that Neil and Henry do. I guess when I think of the past year and I think of what's gone on in the past year, the lack of Meeples and Miniatures podcasts, which is Neil's podcast, and also the lack of View from the Verandas, which is when Neil and Henry get together, has really almost inspired me for the need to do what we do with CWF Gamecast. Because I like to see, or hear more importantly, the kind of stuff that typically goes on with Neil and Henry's interaction. And honestly, I just can't provide the same level of fibre that listeners will expect listening to those two kind of discuss their various wargaming pursuits. So my hope is to get Henry on to a CWF Gamecast for a wide variety of topics of discussion. I'm hoping, well, I kind of get the sense that he's already going to do an expose associated with Games Workshop Historical with Neil, and quite frankly, so much the better, because the more people that talk about it, I think the kind of cleaner the whole situation will be. I'm interested in Henry's perspective. But Henry is also another fellow who basically knows everyone associated with wargaming in the UK and plays with them on a regular basis. If you're friends with him on Facebook, you actually get a very intimate connection. In fact, the terrible thing is that you see these people that you know read about or that write rule sets or these kind of things, and then you make the stupid mistake of trying to befriend them because you know Henry well. I know Henry as well as I know any of these other people. But anyway, and they reject your friendships. We know how that feels. So, anyway. Henry's a wonderful guy. I think he has a certain dynamism, and I really want to say, check out View from the Veranda, check out Meeples and Miniatures, get a sense of who these people are. Neil, on the other hand, I've also wanted to get on the show, because Neil, a very, very humble fellow, and really on the pulse with a lot of things. He does a podcast called Meeples and Miniatures, which probably most of you know about already anyway, which very much takes the view that there's a lot of really exciting and interesting stuff going on with wargaming rules and board games in the UK that you very rarely get to hear about. And he really has his own perspective, and he's part of a very active gaming group, and it just gives you a beautiful insight into the stuff that he's playing, the stuff that he's thinking about, and also bringing all these kind of guests together. And I guess in parallel to all of this, I've kind of maintained a pretty active interviewing role, and it's something I like doing, and these are guys that I think the listeners of the show would get a lot out of. So they're the two that I'm looking to interview in the near future. There's also been some discussion associated with, I don't know what one would call it, like host swapping, I guess, with what Would Pan Do podcast. Now, apparently some of the folks, I don't know what episode they're up to, maybe 12, maybe 13, I don't know, but there's some interest in us swapping hosts for occasional roles. I really don't play enough Flames of War to feel like competent for that. But apparently my accent alone will carry me along on that show. So that may be happening in the near future too. And we may be bringing them on, we may be doing interviews, these kind of things. And I think Jonathan had a few other folk that he wanted to get involved with this particular recording, similar kind of interview format, which, yeah, will be coming up no doubt in the near future. So this has been a somewhat special, somewhat eclectic shout-outs to Jonathan recovering recording of the CWF Gamecast. I promised Jonathan that I'd put something together remotely coherent. I don't know if I've actually done that, but, you know, a large portion of this podcasting thing is just about performing to a wall, and that's what I've done here currently. So please let me know. I've given my email address, but tom@nobleape.com directly. Be sure to befriend me on Facebook, you know, stalk me, this kind of stuff. My home address is relatively easily accessible, and it's amazing how many young kids can call your phone because you interviewed some hacker 15 years ago. But anyway, so enough with my pathetic life. But yeah, anyway, I'm really interested to see what people think of the solo show. Shout out to my friend Martin over in Ireland. He's been doing a lot of video stuff on YouTube, Catch and Leaf 1. Some of the older Games Workshop stuff he's done has just been really nice recently. I really like seeing like second edition Warhammer and this kind of stuff. But That's my particular proclivity in the matter. Anyway, so Tom Barbalay here in Las Vegas, Nevada, a special CWF Gamecast. Hopefully Jonathan will be well. Well, you'll know that Jonathan's well enough to actually edit this thing together because it'll go out in the feed edited. So his health will be recovered by the time you hear this. But I'm really looking forward to talking to him next week. Because my monologue skills, yeah, a little crisp, but, you know, I can get it out there. Anyway, Tom Barbalay, Las Vegas, Nevada, signing out for the CWF Gamecast. Get well, Jonathan. Hopefully he will be back in full form so I can actually have a conversation with another person on my Monday or Tuesday evening, whatever day we decide to record. Signing out. Thank you very much for listening.
Ever wonder what makes a city tick?
It is a phenomenon that some people don't see the 2.5-ton amphibious vehicle.
So do you, at your stand, let people pick their own fruit,
well,
those kind of things?
There are certain items that we would gladly, like cantaloupe and honey, do we let people pick. And if they don't like what's in the bag, they gladly give the bag back.
As we're speaking, there is a group locked in this Granary Cemetery on their Freedom Trail walking tours.
Explore Boston with me at bostonbehindthescenes.com.
The CWF Gamecast is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com. And contest sponsor, Battle Games Magazine, the spirit of wargaming, available at fine hobby shops throughout the United Kingdom and beyond. Subscribe online at www.battlegames.co.uk. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for the CWF Gamecast online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.